Gopijanabha Gerevare Dhari Yasodanandana vraja janaranjana Yamuna tiravana chari Yamuna tiravana
So, following tradition, we'll read a little from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 5. Bombay, February 8, 1972. Prabhupada met with Mr. N. Didn't want to put his name in, and reiterated that he wanted to move on to the land as soon as Mr. N. received the second 50,000 rupees. Mr. N. stood firm on their agreement, and Prabhupada put the matter into the hands of his lawyer, Mr. D., for legal processing. Although Prabhupada was making all the managerial decisions, he wanted the GBC secretaries to take on the responsibility for these practical affairs. He thought it better to use his energy in writing and translating books. Quote, if you GBC do everything nicely, he told his secretary Shyamasundar, then my brain will not be taxed and I can utilize my time completely to produce further books. I can give you Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, so many. There are so many devotional works in our line by the Goswamis. This administrative work is taking too much time. I could be discussing philosophy. My brain is being taxed day and night. Because of this, I'm neglecting my real work. End of quote. Aside from directly managing the Indian projects, Prabhupada was answering as many as a dozen letters daily from devotees around the world. Why do they keep writing asking so many questions, he asked his secretary. The devotees prefer to ask you personally, Shyamasundar said, because their GBC men don't always know the right answer. They know everything by now, Prabhupada replied. I have given you everything. If they don't know the answer, they can find it in my books. Now I am an old man. Let me settle down to philosophy. All day reading letters, doing business, all night signing letters. This is not right. I want to be free from these things. The GBC can do everything now. But it wasn't possible. As soon as Prabhupada would sense that one of his devotees was being cheated, he would immediately become actively involved. And his disciples continued to write him regarding important business and managerial decisions. Nor would he discourage them. His desire for retirement and exclusive literary work remained. But it seemed to be only a wishful thought, a dream. If ISKCON were to develop, then there seemed little scope for his retirement. After the meeting with Mr. N., Prabhupada prepared to leave for South India for a five-day Pandal program in Madras, also on his itinerary, where visits to Calcutta, Mayapur, and Vrindavan. As he prepared to leave Bombay, he felt happy that ISKCON would soon occupy the new Juhu property, and he frequently spoke of his plans. ISKCON would erect a fabulous temple and form a cooperative housing society of devotees of Krishna, the first ISKCON city. Respectable men would purchase flats in ISKCON's high-rise condominium. Devotees would have to become expert to develop and operate such a complex, And as they became successful, they would introduce the same pattern in other cities. Businessmen and professional workers could live as devotees in co-op society, housing their families and sending their children to an ISKCON school. Prabhupada repeatedly talked of constructing an international hotel, somewhat like a Holiday Inn, suitable for foreigners and traveling businessmen, yet reserving a floor for ISKCON life members who would receive free accommodations. The restaurant would be managed by expert Brahmin cooks who would prepare dozens of different preparations of sumptuous prasadam. The deities Radha Rasa Bihari would receive 52 offerings daily, and the prasadam would be distributed to residents and guests. To start things in the right direction, Prabhupada ordered the devotees to immediately arrange for a 10-day public festival on the new land. First, Brahmananda Swami should pay the agreed balance and move on to the land along with all the devotees and the deities, Radha Rasa Vihari. Then they should prepare a big pandal tent and arrange a full program as they had previously in Bombay, in Calcutta, and in Delhi. Prabhupada wanted everything ready for his return in 2 weeks. Hare Krishna. Let's see, Prabhupada's vision was already there. Just at the same time, he acquired the property. And simply by his instructions and by his desire, so much is manifest. Krishna's reciprocated. So, Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 39. Katam Svit Driyate Danda Kim Va Asya Stanam Ipsitam Dandya Kim Kardina Sarve Aho Svit Katachit Ninam Katam Svidriyate Danda Kim Vasya Stanam Ipsitam Dandya Kim Karina Sarve Aho Svit Katachit Ninam Katam Svidriyate Danda Kim Vasya Stanam Ipsitam Dandya Kim Karina Sarve Aho Svit Katachinrinam Katam Svidriyate Danda Kim Vasya Stanam Ipsitam Dandya Kim Karina Sarve Aho Svit Katachinrinam. By which means Driyate is imposed Danda punishment. Kim what? Va or Asya of this Stanam the place. Ipsitam, desirable. Dandya, punishable. Kim, weather. Karyana, fruitive actors. Sarve, all. Aho svit, or weather. Katachit, some. Ninam of the human beings. Translation. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? Translation again. What is the process of punishing others? What are the actual candidates? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable? Or only some of them? Purport. One who has the power to punish others should not punish everyone. There are innumerable living entities, the majority of whom are in the spiritual world and are nityamukta, everlastingly liberated. There is no question of judging these liberated living beings. Only a small fraction of the living entities, perhaps one-fourth, are in the material world, and the major portion of the living entities in the material world, 8 million of the 8,400,000 forms of life, are lower than human beings. They are not punishable, for under the laws of material nature, they are automatically evolving. Human beings who are advanced in consciousness are responsible, but not all of them are punishable. Those engaged in advanced pious activities are beyond punishment. Only those who engage in sinful activities are punishable. Therefore, the Vishnu Dutas particularly inquired about who is punishable and why Yamaraj has been designated to discriminate between who is punishable and who is not. How is one to be judged? What is the basic principle of authority? These are the questions raised by the Vishnu Dutas. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Garanjana Salakaya Chakshur Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayati Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Hande Shri Gunundina Tananam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niyavrishesha Shanyavari Pastachyade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, yesterday's verse, who spoke on yesterday's verse? Was it you, Mukta? The blessed messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutta, said, if you are actually servants of Yamaraj, you must explain to us the meaning of religious principles and the symptoms of irreligion. And then today, what is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? Good questions. It's nice to know that in universal affairs, there's somebody protecting the interest of the living entities to make sure that those who have been authorized to mete out punishment are on the right track and not indiscriminately punishing without just cause. It appears that that's what the Vishnu Dutas have appeared to, that principle is that what appears is what the Vishnu Dutas have appeared to protect, to make sure that the Yama Dutas were not punishing somebody without just cause. And as we spoke about the other day, that inflicting punishment upon others is a responsibility, and we spoke about the differences between those who have entrusted with such responsible work, such as praising, encouraging, punishing, directing, instructing. Just like the verse in the Bhagavatam states that one should not become a guru, a king, a parent, a teacher, unless he can deliver his dependents from the repetition of birth and death. And that verse is oftentimes quoted specifically to emphasize that one who takes such an authoritative position over his dependents, he should be a genuine well-wisher and should instruct in such a way that the best interest of the dependent is being fulfilled. And therefore, it is very responsible to be in a position such as the Yamadutas, Yamaraj, our parent, teacher, spiritual master, demigod, because one is entrusted with responsibility upon others who are dependent upon them for just treatment. Therefore, as we said, it's good to see that in the universal affairs, that the representatives of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, are now questioning the Yamadutas. Okay, you've been entrusted with a service which specifically is punishment. Don't get carried away. Imagine having a service which is just punishment. If you have a service which is just punishment, and you don't have your objectives clearly understood internally, then it could very easily get carried away and think, well, let me, I'm supposed to punish everybody. That's my service. And not only that, one may even begin to develop a attachment to punishing. And when one begins developing an attachment to punishment, then his ability to discriminate is lost. Because as soon as attachment is there, then you can no longer discriminate between what's right and what's wrong, because then you have the wrong frame of reference, which is, I'm enjoying it, and that's good enough for me. So the Yamadutas are now being challenged. They're being challenged by the Vishnu Dutas. They're saying, okay, you have a service, you're punishing. But now we're going to ask you, please, as we spoke about the other day, the Yamadutas were not challenging in an offensive way, neither were they challenging in a way which was attacking them. You were giving them all opportunity to explain. You're representing Yamaraj. I think Yamaraj might have a different opinion about this decision, and you're representing him. Because Yamaraj, as we also spoke about the other day, Yamaraj is in sync with Supersoul. Yamaraj is in sync with Supersoul, and therefore yesterday's verse was, it was the duties of those who represent the spiritual master, or who represent their master. They should be in sync with their master. And therefore, the Vishnu Dutas are checking, are you in sync with your master? Are you actually in sync? You're coming here to pick up this Ajamil and to bring him, to punish him. You're just simply messengers, and you're coming to pick him up in a very fearful way with your subtle ropes and everything else required to, you know, drag him out of his vehicle. But are you in sync with your master? So, therefore, they're asking him, please explain what it is, what criteria you're using now to punish Ajamil. It's a very valid question. Very valid question. And, of course, as the conversation will continue. The devotees, the astute observers of this dialogue will actually be able to begin to gradually see that it was not only was a good question, but that the Yamadutas didn't have the full answer. We also explained the other day that the Yamadutas database was limited. They had a limited database because they were taking their data from the witnesses, such as the sun, fire, the moon. There are so many different witnesses to the activities of the living beings in the material world. And all these witnesses, as soon as they witness, because if they're not in sync with Supersoul, they're witnessing what they're seeing externally, and then they enter their data. So they have a whole database of external witnesses' conclusions that we didn't see any trace of atonement here in this Ajamil. We didn't observe it at all. All we saw was his going to prostitutes, and we saw him engaging in sinful activities. We saw everything, the observers, the witnesses, and don't forget, those witnesses are they're witnessing everybody. So their witnesses are entering their data of everything they've seen, and therefore the Yamadutas database is incomplete because they failed to understand that the final witness, Supersoul, also was there and is included as the witness, as the Supersoul. And something very interesting, I don't want to go off the topic, it's very connected, but I wanted to read something about Supersoul as the witness, because Supersoul is a very, very effective personality when it comes to punishment. As we said, Supersoul and Yamaraj, they're in sync. They're working together to ascertain what's the best destination for this living entity in the next life. And therefore, for those who still have unfulfilled desires and who've committed sinful activities, and therefore they require to be punished, and therefore part of the punishment, as we read the other day, was to get them prepared for the next body, because they're having a human form of life. They may not be so acclimated to eating stool every day or in a pig's body or whatever it may be, so they may have to get a suitable punishment to be acclimated for their next body. And when we enter into the body, everything has been justly done for the sake of that living entity's both his just punishment and also for his next body, wherever it may be. So Supersoul, as we said, he's a very important part. And if we leave Supersoul out, then we're missing a very, very most essential part of the information required to make a decision about the living entity's destination in his next, after giving up his current body. And I was reading, it was in Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually. It's Adi Leela. Unfortunately, I didn't write the reference. Prabhupada says in the purport, the Paramatma, or Supersoul, the Paramatma or Supersoul, the guide of the individual living beings, does not take part in fulfilling the desires of the living beings, but he arranges for their fulfillment by material nature. Okay. Supersoul, he's aloof. He just simply witnesses and sanctions. He doesn't take part in fulfilling the desires of those who are under the laws of material nature. And in fact, that's going to come out in the dialogue and in the future, that the Yamadutas are going to say, those who are under our responsibility, under our jurisdiction for punishment, are those who are under the laws of material nature. That's our jurisdiction. Everybody has their jurisdictional responsibilities. Those who are under the laws of material nature, they're under our jurisdiction. Of course, those who surrender to Krishna, as Prabhupada said in the purport, they're not in the jurisdiction. Prabhupada said, most living entities are not punishable. The living entities in the spiritual world, they're not subject to punishment. Those who engage in human beings, they're responsible, but those who engage in advanced pious activities, they're not under the jurisdiction of the Yamadutas either, because they don't require punishment. They get the results of their pious activities, which is another form of punishment for somebody who actually knows that anywhere in the material world is punishment. For a devotee, he even sees that the results of my pious activities and my elevation to the heavenly planets and my result in good birth and power and so forth, this is also punishment. This is how a devotee sees it. But it's not punishment according to the universal laws. Only those under the jurisdiction are the three modes of material nature are those who have engaged in sinful activities. So, therefore, the Prabhupada is making the point that the Paramatma doesn't take part in fulfilling the desires. He doesn't take part in fulfilling their desires. That's also entrusted to other administrators, universal administrators, along with Yamaraj, with other demigods, who facilitate living entities' elevation to heavenly planets and various types of enjoyment. But that's not the point. As soon as an individual soul becomes conscious of his eternal relationship with the super soul and looks only toward him, he at once becomes free from the entanglements of material enjoyment. Entanglements of material enjoyment. Note. Christian philosophers who do not believe in the law of karma put forward the argument that it is absurd to say one must accept the results of past deeds of which he has no consciousness. Right? A criminal is first reminded of his misdeeds by witnesses in a law court, and then he is punished. If death is complete forgetfulness, why should a person be punished for his past misdeeds? The conception of the Paramatma is an invincible answer to these fallacious arguments. The Paramatma is the witness of the past activities of the individual living being. A man may not remember what he has done in his childhood, but his father, who has seen him grow through different stages of development, certainly remembers. Similarly, the living being undergoes many changes of body through many lives, but the Supersoul is always with him and remembers all his activities despite his evolution through different bodies. So Prabhupada is saying, someone may say, they may put forward the argument, it's absurd to say that one must accept the results of past deeds of which he has no consciousness. They're saying, well, I don't remember. Like Prabhupada is using this example. In fact, in one place he actually has the whole dialogue of a person in the courtroom and saying, okay, what did you do on this particular day? And the witness says, sorry, I don't remember. Well, where were you? I just can't remember. What were you doing? What day was that? It was January 19th, 2017. No, 29th, excuse me. What's the date today? I don't remember. 28th, 2017. I don't remember. You don't remember. So are you therefore saying that because you don't remember, then you're going to leave it at that? I leave it at that. I don't remember. Okay. That's it. You don't remember anything? I don't remember. First witness. Did you see where he was on January 28, 2017? Oh, yes, I was there. I saw him. Oh, really? What was he doing? Well, he wasn't at Srimad Bhagavatam class. Where was he? He was doing something. Oh, what was he doing? What was he so busy doing? Well, I saw him engaged in certain activities, which were... Anyways, it's just a story. It's an example. So someone say, what good does it do if I don't remember? Well, somebody remembers. Not only that, he remembers what you were doing, what you were desiring. He knows everything. He knows past, present, and future. He knows exactly what you want to do. He knows exactly why you wanted to do it. He knows exactly why you did it. And therefore, to say you don't remember, why should it be punished? It's because there's somebody who remembers. Not only somebody who remembers, but somebody who has a very, very complete testimony. Complete. you gave up your chance. Well, someone may say, well, why can't I remember then? If I remember then maybe I won't do it again. You know, sometimes people offer that argument. If I remember, then maybe I won't do it again. But, well, unfortunately, you don't remember. And therefore, the super soul is one who remembers what your desires were. And although you had every opportunity to get out of that suffering condition in your previous birth, you didn't do it. You didn't do it. Therefore, and instead of avoiding that suffering condition, which you could have avoided by pious activities, you didn't. Instead, you pursued sinful activities. You had your chance. You had your chance in your last life. If it was a human form of life, you had your chance, because in the human form of life, you have the intelligence to know what is right and what is wrong. You had your chance. You can say, why didn't I only remember? But you had your chance to choose between right and wrong, and you didn't choose wrong. You didn't choose right. Therefore, those living entities from previous human condition are held accountable, held responsible. And if you say, I don't remember, then Super Soul says, well, I saw it all. And therefore, in consultation with Yamaraj, he sets everything up, all suitable arrangements. And then, of course, Prabhupada does say in the commentary to today's verse that the lower forms of life, they're evolving. They're not punishable because they can't discriminate between right and wrong. Prabhupada says, religion begins in the human form of life. The difference between a human being and an animal is a human being has the opportunity to accept religious principles. Therefore, one should know what is his duty. One should not know what is not his duty, because Krishna says, according to the rules and regulations given in the scriptures, by such activities, one can be gradually elevated. And one who acts whimsically, doesn't follow the injunctions of scriptures, but according to his own whim, he can achieve neither happiness nor perfection nor the supreme destination. Krishna states, you know, in the whatever chapter it is in the Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demoniac natures, I think it is. And so, therefore, the lower life forms, they're not subject to punishment, but the human being is responsible. Prabhupada tells the story, you know, he always said that a person, if a human being, he is supposed to know what is right, what is wrong. If he drives on the left side of the road, he'll be punished. And if somebody stops and says, the police officer says to him, you were driving on the wrong side of the road. And the person says, oh, I didn't know it was the wrong side of the road. He said, no, well, you were driving on the wrong side of the road. Here's your ticket. You must be punished. So you may say, I don't know, but ignorance is no help. One should know. One should know. Human being must know. So, therefore, punishment is there for those who are under the jurisdiction or under the influence of the three modes of material nature. They are subject to punishment. And as Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, where he describes his opulences, He says, I'm the rod of punishment. In other words, Krishna himself. Many places, Krishna says, he says, I punish others in the form of time. Right? Krishna's punishing his Kalarupa in the form of eternal time. He's punishing the living entities who have been under the influence of the time factor and who, by dint of their past pious or impious activities, have to the result, they have to get the consequences of their past pious activities, and then after they exhaust the results of their pious activities, then they have to also take the results of their past sinful activities, and therefore, in due course of time, these things are all manifest. So Krishna, in the form of time, he is also punishing all living entities in the form of Kalarupa and keeping them in forgetfulness. The illusory energy has two potencies. One is potency is to pull the living entity down into forgetfulness. The other one is to keep them there, to keep them in forgetfulness. That is the potency of the material energy. And Krishna says that this material nature works according to my direction and is producing all moving and non-moving beings. Therefore, Krishna is ultimately in the form of time, and he is allowing all the living entities to get their just punishment according to the three modes of material nature. But he personally doesn't have to get involved. Natasya karyam karanam ca vidyate natatsya masya vijikaspitishyate parasya shakti vivadaya vishuyate svabhaviki gyanabhala kriyacha. That Krishna doesn't have to take care of these things because his devotees take care of it for him. Such as Yamaraj and such as the other demigods, they take care of it for him. And part of that taking care of it is punishment. But Krishna doesn't get involved in either awarding or punishing. He simply witnesses and gives sanction as super soul. So, but, as we said, those who do punish on his behalf, therefore, should be very, very knowledgeable to make sure that their punishments are appropriate according to the severity of the sin, just as another place, according to the severity of the disease, one has to have a proper medicine, and the medicine, the treatment may not be so necessarily so pleasurable, but nonetheless, the medicine is meant to cure the patient. In the same way, the punishment is meant to cure the sinful propensity, the desires to give up sinful activities and to cure that living entity so that after receiving just punishment, he may, by good fortune, take the right path and avoid having to be punished in future lives when he once again gets the human form of life. So, and Prabhupada also says that punishment is just like the, there's two types of punishment. There's the punishment like the enemy who conquers his enemy. And he says the other type of punishment is like the father who punishes his child. And he said the punishment of the father who punishes his child, that he's punishing his child because he's thinking of the ultimate good of the child. And because he's thinking of the ultimate good of the child, therefore his punishment is just because he knows what is good for the child. And none of that, his punishment is not born of envy, is not born out of excessive anger, not born out of attachment, but he's thinking of the welfare of the child. So therefore, because he's thinking of the welfare of the child, his punishment is appropriate for the child, so the child can not have to suffer in the future. I was just thinking how I was sometimes punished as a child. I didn't see it that way. And I'm sure many children don't see it that way. I remember getting a punishment once that I didn't think I deserved. But I don't know if the Vishnu Dutas or Yama Dutas were there to to check to see if the punishment was just or not. But I remember that punishment to this day. I'm not going to say what it was. But sometimes it's hard for the child to discriminate if the punishment is just or not, especially the child who's mischievous. He may not necessarily accept the punishment as just, and he may continue to do it again. But anyways, nonetheless, the parent is thinking of the welfare of the child. So in the same way, the Yamadutas have to be in the same consciousness, that the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas are therefore checking them, that if you don't properly discriminate, and then if you don't understand who's subject for punishment and who's not subject for punishment, and if you punish anyways, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? You've lost your perspective of things. You're out of control. You've lost your perspective. What value is there in punishing somebody who doesn't need to be punished? If you're punishing somebody who doesn't need to be punished, then I have to question why you're doing it. Do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy punishing? Of course, the Vishnudutas aren't going to ask that. But therefore, now they're checking to say, because you've made a decision which wasn't completely in sync with Supersoul, and because you acted what you thought rightfully and justifiably so on behalf of your master, you weren't fully in sync. Your database was not complete, and therefore we're going to put things in proper perspective. Now, you tell us what it is, and it might be interesting at some point in a future class to go through and to hear all the different explanations the Yamadutas are going to give, because their explanations are pretty good. I mean, they're pretty good. If one reads their explanations, they're completely Shastric. Not only that, right from the very beginning, they say, what constitutes sin is those activities which are not accordance with Shastra. That's what constitutes sin. Anybody who follows Shastra, anyone who accepts the authority of Shastra, because Shastra is meant to direct the living entities in a way so that he may progressively evolve, and so he won't have to suffer subsequent births, and so he can actually ultimately come to the goal of which is to become a devotee of the Lord. So that anybody who follows Shastra, then there's no sin. But those who act contrary to Shastra, so therefore they're going to give all Shastric evidence, all very valid Shastric evidence. But sometimes, as we said, a decision has to be made independently. And when that decision is made independently, it has to come from somebody who knows the goal of all Shastra, and that is Krishna. And therefore, if there's no need to be punished, no need for punishment, then the Vishnudutas are going to challenge the Yamadutas and make it clear to them that they've missed something very, very important. There's no longer any need, because Ajamil has already atoned. Already atoned. And therefore, because he's already atoned by calling out the names of the Lord, there's no need to punish him. Of course, as we said before, the other day, that to atone and to counteract sinful reactions means that one may not be punished, but it doesn't necessarily mean that one automatically qualifies to enter into the spiritual world. And we gave the example of that, that although somebody may get a passport, he still needs a visa. So somebody may have a passport, says, okay, I have a passport, I can get out from this jurisdiction, I can go out. But where you go, you need a visa. So if you want Vaikuntha, if you want the spiritual abode, then you don't simply to call out the names of Narayan and counteracting the effects of whatever sinful activities you have coming to you. Okay, you've counteracted those effects. No punishment required. But if you're going to call out the name of Narayan with full knowledge and service to the Lord Narayan, if you have a service attitude in your chanting of service to the Lord, then you get a visa. You get a visa. So, therefore, it's described that in Namabhas that one can eradicate all kinds of sins committed for many, many, many births simply by chanting the names of the Lord. But in the conversation between Haridas Thakur and Gopal Chakravarti, it was made very clear that, yes, liberation from sinful reactions, this is simply a byproduct. But actually you fail to recognize, as Haridas Thakur goes on to explain, what is the real purpose of chanting the name? The real purpose of chanting Krishna's name is to obtain pure devotional service and love for the Supreme Lord. And that love and service is that visa for entering into that destination requires the proper attitude of chanting the holy name of the Lord. So Ajamil will be relinquished from his having to be punished by the Vishnu Dutas. But, as we also explained the other day, Ajamil got his second chance, and therefore he proved that he had sufficiently atoned, because when he remained after hearing the discourse between the Yamadutas and Vishnu Dutas, he understood what he had done. He had committed so much sinful activities. He was so fully repentant for all the sins committed, and he realized that he should continue out the rest of his life in endeavoring to fully situate himself in full remembrance of the Lord. And by so doing, going off to Hardwar and fully engaging in the service of the Lord, then the Vishnu Dutas came back again. This time they had a better engagement, not just simply to stop the Yamadutas, but the Vishnu Dutas appeared to take him to his rightful destination for his full devotional service to the holy name of the Lord. So all glories to the Vishnu Dutas. And we should gratefully acknowledge that they're there in the background to make sure that there's no injustices for those who have sufficiently atoned. And to make sure, just like Prabhupada, we read about Prabhupada was there in the background in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. So many things were going on. Prabhupada said, I want to become free from all these managerial things. He said, let somebody else, the GBCs, they know the answer. Let them punish and reward. Let them make the decisions what's right and what's wrong. They know my instructions. They've heard my instructions from me. Let me stay in the background. But Prabhupada then, although Prabhupada pleaded, let me stay in the background and completely absorb myself in Shastra and simply writing my books, Prabhupada saw that sometimes some injustices were done, and he had to step in and make sure that proper justice was served. And when he served proper justice because he was seen as Krishna's representative, the devotees accepted as, oh yes, this is just punishment. Let me accept it as Krishna's mercy. That is the responsibility of persons who are conversant with scriptural injunctions and who also can properly understand who is to be punished and who is to be awarded. And therefore, there's that wonderful story. Yeah, this wonderful pastime, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who was it? Kamalakanta Vishwasa. I think his name was. Kamalakanta Vishwasa. He was an associate of Advaita Acharya. And He was associate of Advaita Acharya, and what being an associate of Advaita Acharya, he understood Advaita Acharya's true glory. And on one hand, he said that Advaita Acharya, he was actually an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he glorified him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But also because he was an associate of Advaita Acharya, he had, at another time, he had said something about it. Advaita Acharya had incurred a debt to the king. And he made a statement about this to somebody, that Advaita Acharya had this debt. And when Lord Chaitanya, news got to Lord Chaitanya about the statement of Kambalakanta Vishvasa, he said, yes, Kambalakanta Vishvasa is right. Whatever he said about Advaita Acharya as being the Supreme Personality of God is correct. But what is this nonsense that he said, that Advaita Acharya has a debt to the king? He has no debts. You think he's some mundane person, that he has some debts to fulfill? And he became so angry, he said, I think he called him a balia. He said, keep this balia out of my sight. I don't even want to see him. And when Lord Chaitanya made that statement, he was punishing Kambalakanta Vishvasa for making such a statement about Advaita Acharya. And then, of course, Kambalakanta Vishvasa and other people also, they were wondering, like, why had Lord Chaitanya done this? And Kambalakanta Vishvasa himself, he was like completely bewildered. He couldn't understand why the Lord had given him such a punishment. And Advaita Acharya, he went to Kambalakanta Vishvasa and he said, you don't know how fortunate you are. Can't you understand how fortunate you are? You have been punished by Lord Chaitanya. Someone who's punished by the Lord, it means the Lord has accepted you as a servant. He's accepted you as a servant. And you're complaining that he's punished you? What better position for you to be in? He's accepted you as a servant. He said, the Lord, he's punished. He punished me. That's right. Advaita Acharya said, previously, he punished me, but he also praises me, but he punished me. He punished me when I was reciting Yoga Vishishta. I was reciting Yoga Vishishta and I was presenting it in a personal way. And of course, his motivation to do it was because he couldn't tolerate. Advaita Acharya couldn't tolerate the fact that Lord Chaitanya was giving him respect and worshiping him as a superior. He says, I'm his servant. I want to think myself his servant. How can I get him to treat me as a servant? I know. I'll preach Mayavad philosophy. Certainly when he hears me preaching Mayavad philosophy, he'll punish me. And when he punishes me, then and only then will I actually have my innermost core of my desires fulfilled. I've understood that he's accepted me as his servant. So therefore, Advaita Acharya was explaining to Kambalakanta Vishvasa that previously I was reciting Mayavad philosophy. And when the Lord understood and he heard that me chant this, reciting this Mayavad philosophy, he came to that place and he immediately grabbed me and pulled me out of the seat. Of course, the whole description is there that Sita Thakurani, was Advaita Acharya's wife, and she couldn't understand, what has my husband done? He's an old man. What are you doing? Why are you dragging him and pulling him in this way? Please, be merciful to him. Don't punish him. And while she was speaking this way, and Advaita Acharya was being pulled by the Lord, then Vrindavan Das Thakur describes that Advaita Acharya had a big smile on his face. Finally, he's recognized me as his servant. And the Lord, therefore, chastised him and punished him in this way. So Advaita Acharya related this incident to Kambalakanta Vishvasa and said, he chastised me. You are so fortunate. But still, he lets me see him. And then he said he also chastised Sachimata, his own mother. He chastised Sachimata. She one time under her breath, and he began to relate the whole story. He says, Advaita Acharya, he calls himself to be non-dual, but actually he's very duplicitous. She was very disturbed by the fact that Advaita Acharya was attracting her son to come and to hear about renunciation. And she was thinking, previously, my elder son, Vishwarupa, he went and would hear Advaita Acharya, not Yoga Vashishta. This time, Advaita Acharya was preaching the glories of devotional service and renunciation. And when Vishwarup, her elder son, heard this, he decided to leave home and take sannyas. So then, when she understood that her younger son and only son, Jagannath Mishra, he had already departed from the world. Vishwarupa had taken sannyas, and all Sachimata had was Nimai. And when she found that Nimai was going to hear Advaita Acharya, she was thinking, he calls himself to be Advaita, non-dual, but he's very duplicitous because now he's trying to take away my only life, my son. And when she said that, Lord Chaitanya, understanding what was going on in her mind, she didn't even say it, considered that to be an offense to Advaita Acharya. And therefore, when Lord Chaitanya was speaking in this way, she said, only if my mother actually takes the dust from Advaita Acharya's lotus feet, will I forgive her for this offense. So he punished her. So of course, as the whole pastime goes on, Sachimata, she came before Advaita Acharya, and when Advaita Acharya heard this, she said, Sachimata committing offense? She is the mother of Nimai. How could she commit an offense? And when Advaita Acharya began thinking of Sachimata, he began glorifying her, and he fell down in complete ecstasy, glorifying Sachimata, thinking, what offense could she have possibly committed? And when Advaita Acharya fell on the ground, then everybody told Sachimata, now's your chance. And Sachimata went at that point while he was on the ground in ecstasy and took the dust from his feet and placed it on her head. And then Lord Chaitanya said, yes, now you have done what's right. So Lord Chaitanya punished Sachimata for her offense of even thinking. And Advaita Acharya was citing this also to Kamalakanta Vishvasa. He said, when the Lord punishes his devotee, the devotee understands that punishment means that I've been recognized as a servant. What better position is there? And then after explaining all this to Kamalakanta Vishvasa, then Advaita Acharya went back to Lord Chaitanya and told Lord Chaitanya, he said, what have you done? You are so merciful to Kamalakanta Vishvasa. You are so merciful, but you are giving me the bitter poison. Because your mercy is even greater. Your punishment to him is even greater than your punishment that you've given to me. You've punished me, but you've allowed me to see me. It's to see you. But you've punished Kamalakanta Vishvasa. But your punishment is even more severe than the punishment you've given to me. How can you be so merciful to Kamalakanta Vishvasa in this way? This was how Advaita Acharya was thinking. Punishment. To be punished by the Lord, to be punished by the representative of the Lord, to be punished by somebody who's actually accepted someone as a servant and punishes them because of love and affection and because he's thinking of the ultimate interest. Advaita Acharya was establishing this principle. And therefore he was coming before Lord Chaitanya and speaking this way. You're even more merciful to Kamalakanta Vishvasa. So of course when Lord Chaitanya heard that from the mouth of Advaita Acharya, he said, okay, well then tell Kamalakanta Vishvasa to come here. I want to talk to him. Immediately reduced that he can't see me. by the mercy of Vaitracharya. He said, tell him to come here. And then when Kamalakanta Vishvasa came before Lord Chaitanya, then Lord Chaitanya corrected him and said, you made a very bad mistake. You know, you've, on one hand, you've glorified Advaitracharya for being the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then, on the other hand, you've made him look like an ordinary personality to say that he has a debt. This you should not have done. And he corrected him. So, anyways, this is also another way to look at punishment. And therefore, Krishna says, I am the rod of chastisement, and therefore, those who are meting out punishment should always think of the welfare of those who are being punished, and should understand to give out a punishment which is unjust and which is not founded. There may be consequences if the Vishnu duties, or as Srila Prabhupada, sometimes he would step in and he would have to correct a particular situation during his manifest presence. And when he saw that something either unjust or improper was being done, Prabhupada had to correct the situation. And although he spoke about that, as we read in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, wanting to give up all of these activities, we see from his merciful presence in our movement that right up till the end, he was involved in all of these affairs for our sake, being very kind and increasing our attachment to him more and more as the merciful Father who, even in his absence, will, we pray that he continues to punish us for justly for any wrongs that we may commit in service to his divine lotus feet. This is how a devotee should think about punishment. Anyways, I don't know if I went on a tangent or not, but nonetheless, I tried to speak about the importance of understanding punishment for both those being punished and for those delivering it. There's some criteria that we should look within our own hearts and to make sure that the right criteria is used in both circumstances. Any questions? About?
Exempt categories. These are lower species.
Exempt?
Exempted.
Exempted, yes.
Exempted from the punishment of the sinful activities.
Uh-huh.
So out of 8,400,000, 400,000 is the human race, human species. In this 400 human species, they are punishable. Below them are exempted from the punishment for sinful activities.
No.
All the 400 species.
They're all subject to be punished, but not all punished.
No,
subject. They're subject. In other words, they're under the jurisdiction. Yes, they're under the jurisdiction, but Prabhupada made the point very clear. But those who engage in advanced pious activities,
they're
exempt.
Yes, the simple activities, like all these 400,000, yeah. If they did the simple activities, then they're punished.
Yes, yes. They're
lower than that.
They're in the Amaraj's database. Yeah. Yes.
If you mentioned that punishment given by the fatherly punishment was given by a father, it's for the improvement and the betterment of the servant. What happens on the other hand? If there's an enemy, someone who doesn't really like you,
then he's subject to be punished because he's wrongfully inflicted punishment or suffering on somebody, and therefore because he's wrongfully inflicted suffering willingly, because he didn't know. I mean, maybe he could say, I didn't know. Well, you should know. If you're going to be punishing, if you're going to be inflicting suffering, you should know.
But wouldn't the criteria then be to destroy?
Destroy?
Destroy the other. I mean, it's person that you will punish.
Destroy what? Excuse me.
The enemy or the person who doesn't, who knowingly is inflicting you harm.
Yes.
What would the criteria of punishment be?
On who?
On the person who's doing you harm.
The criteria?
Yeah.
Same legislation is there. Same demigods. Same thing. Yeah. They're under the same jurisdiction. Yeah. Unless, of course, one unknowingly. If he unknowingly does it, and if he's a devotee, I'm speaking of devotees now, unknowingly may do something, then. Or just like that example is given, that, you know, the Brahmin who approached Lord Chaitanya and said, previously I didn't know, and I said certain things about Vaishnavas. I said certain things about Vaishnavas that I shouldn't have said unknowingly. How do I correct myself, rectify myself from that? So one may then come to know that they've done something. Therefore, they can correct themselves if they've come to know they've done something wrong. But if they haven't done something wrong, and they don't apologize either to the person they've done something wrong to, then they're subject to punishment. Of course, for the devotee, Krishna may punish him in a way that he may give him some slap. But still, that's Krishna's punishment, and whatever Krishna gives, it's simply a token in comparison to what we would have gotten if Krishna wasn't behind it all. And, I mean, if Krishna wasn't involved in it. If it's his agents, they have some very severe punishments to mete out. So we should be very careful to inflict suffering on others knowingly. We better know what we're doing. Even look what happened to Yamaraj, Mandak Muni, right? Yamaraj had to be cursed to take birth as a Sudra. Yamaraj made a mistake once, because Mandak Muni, he was punished for piercing. Was it piercing? What was it? An insect, wasn't it? With a straw. And he didn't think that the punishment he got was commensurate with the activity. So he cursed Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, as a result, had to take birth as Vidura. Of course, Vidura was a great saintly person. But here's evidence that you better know. You better know what you're doing if you're going to mete out punishment or inflict pain or suffering to others, because there will be consequences.
Just the super soul, we're saying that the super soul is the witness, but does the super soul have empathy and care?
Always. Always. Otherwise, he would have left you a long time ago. And if he would have left you, where would you be? Wandering without his presence. He's bearing witness because he wants to guide you to the right direction. And therefore, that is his compassion. Otherwise, he was at, this one doesn't even deserve my presence. Let him go to hell forever. And I don't care. I'm out. No? You know, of course, he does say he cast down those who are demoniac into lower species of life. But he punishes them. But super soul traverses. And by mere fact that he traverses, it's so that he can bear witness. So to give you a chance at every opportunity, to give you that chance to turn to him. And as soon as he says, see, oh yes, just see. Imagine if he left. Imagine if he just vacated. And then who would witness the fact that you're turning? Who would you turn to? Of course, you can turn to his devotees. So his point is, he's always kind, and the mere fact that he doesn't vacate is the symptom of his kindness. And he's always very merciful. And that's what the whole story of Bhajamil is all about, how merciful he is. What is his most merciful form? His name. In fact, it's Rupa Goswami in his prayers, in Namastakam, he actually describes that of the two forms of the Lord, one form of the Lord in the Archivigraha, very merciful. But if you commit offenses to Archivigraha, then he will not forgive. But his name, in the form of his name, is even merciful than he is. And his name, he forgives. He's non-different. Of course, Archivigraha is also non-different from him. But if you want forgiveness, to go to take shelter of his name. His name is the most merciful manifestation. All the more reason why we should be chanting his name in the right state of mind. Understanding the two glories of Krishna in his name. And that's also what's meant to be brought to light. Right? If this kind of mercy is there for somebody who didn't even knowingly chant his name, what to speak of those who chant his name with the right service attitude? Of course, for those who don't, who call out his name to counteract their sinful activities, they'll have to be punished. It is offensive. Anyways, I have meetings this morning, and I have to stop because my schedule begins in 15 minutes. So we'll end here. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.